Howdy do, buckaroos. Welcome to the Mock Observer's Daily Observations Podcast. It is Monday, the 3rd of August, 2020. We are managing to make it through one way or another, I suppose. And for those who tune in for the important portion of the program, it's Monday. With me today, I have two wonderful guests. Part one of the Dream Team, I have Charlotte Henry. Hi, Charlotte.
Hello, happy Monday.
And Dream Team Part 2, John Martellaro. Hi, John.
Hi, Kelly. Hi, Charlotte.
I'm glad you're both with me today. John, I'd like to start with you and something that you broke down in Particle Debris last week about one of the many benefits of Apple designing their own chips.
Yeah, we know that Intel CPUs are not cheap. Average run of the mill... Intel Ice Lake or Comet Lake CPU is going to be $300-$500, maybe closer to $400, and it's a significant part of the cost of a MacBook, and even more so for a Xeon based system. So I saw this article at Tom's Guide that says that what we thought all along, that when Apple builds its own ARM chips, it'll be able to pocket the difference and build a machine for less money than before. It's always cost less when you're vertically integrated and build your own parts. And so this rumor monger from Japan at Komiaya has just published a leak about how he thinks we're going to have a MacBook, a resurrection of the MacBook. The two machines that are going to come out first, a new MacBook, like the MacBook we had from 2015 to 19 with an ARM processor, and a new 13-inch MacBook Pro. And the thing about this is that the prices he lists from a source he has are $799 and $1099, respectively. Now, I paid $1,299 for my MacBook in 2015. So $799 for a 12-inch. And it may not be 12-inch. It may, 12-inch is a little bit cramped. I'm guessing that the MacBook is going to grow to 13 inches. But $799 is pretty sweet, especially if you get an education discount.
Yeah.
And then the 13-inch MacBook Pro with ARM is rumored to be, as I said, $1,099. Mm-hmm. Which is about $300 less than the current list base price. Now, these prices go up, of course, as you add RAM, storage, sure, and features, but still. Now, in my Particle Debris, I mentioned that the reason Apple is not going to pocket the difference and is passing this savings on to the consumer, my theory is it's based on several things. To one, which I didn't mention, which I just thought of, was to better compete in the laptop market in general, but mostly to compete in the education market, because Apple's getting its butt killed by Chromebooks in some school districts. And Apple's been apparently unable, with an Intel processor, even in a MacBook Air, to reduce the price much below $1,000. And so Apple needs a new weapon to go to war against the Chromebooks. And a $720 or $730 MacBook with an ARM processor running all your Intel binaries would be a great weapon in that war.
Yeah. Now, my question on this, I know you said like that this would be the starting price, but that the MacBook would turn into a 13-inch machine. Do you think that means that the Silicon MacBook Pro would be 14, and then we'd have 14-inch and 16-inch machines?
Yeah, we've heard we've heard rumors about a 14-inch MacBook Pro, and we thought the new Ice Lake 13-inch MacBook Pro, which just came out in what, June? May or June?
Maybe it was May.
We thought that was going to go from 13.6 to 14.
Yeah.
The way the 15.6-inch MacBook Pro went to 16.
Yeah.
But it did not. But yeah, it most certainly is going to happen, in my opinion, with the ARM-based MacBook Pro.
Okay.
Although in Tom's Guide article, they use the terms 13-inch MacBook Pro, which is a euphemism. because it's really 13.6 inches. But we call it 13-inch.
Yeah. We've seen... Well, because it's kind of where they've been for a while. Like, we had a 12-inch PowerBook, I think it was, back in the day. And everything has been 13 and 15 forever. And then there was that 17 for a while. And then the 17 went away, and we were back to 13 and 15. And then we got... your MacBook, which is the 12-inch.
I kind of mildly regret buying that because the 12-inch screen turned out to be just a little too cramped for me.
Okay.
I have a 13-inch MacBook Pro, which I inherited from my wife. Mm-hmm. And 13 inches is a world of 13.6 is a world of difference from 12. Mm-hmm. And so I would, okay, if you are confronted with the option between 12 and 13.6, seriously consider the bigger display.
Yeah.
It's very portable and small. It's noticeably smaller and easier to handle than a 16-inch MacBook Pro, which is a monster.
I don't know. That's
a giant backpack.
Well, I remember the 17-inch, and it's absolutely a monster. I feel like the 16 is not the worst thing, relatively.
I think I had one. At university, I think I had one. Maybe it was 15, actually. And that felt pretty big.
Even the 15 is a pretty massive machine. Like, to me, relatively, like, I remember being sort of, stressed out. I had a couple of 15-inch machines, and I was sort of considering the 13-inch and thinking about, like, would it be possible to give up all that real estate? And in my case, the answer was absolutely yes. Mostly because you can get away with a smaller backpack. Because I am the person that will put two more things in a backpack than it should reasonably hold at any point. And when my backpack has to hold a 17-inch machine, that's a whole lot of extra space for me to jam junk into. And that's what I will do.
It depends on how much carry around you do. I mean, if you're carrying around from location to location, you're on the move with it all day long, you can get to be a pain. But if you have a situation where you take a 16-inch to work, you set it up, you leave it, you take it home at night, you know, you don't move it around a lot, then it's doable.
Yeah, if you don't have to take it to other locations. But even if you do, like, you can still get a pretty lean and mean laptop bag now that will allow for...
Well, it's the weight. Know.
Yeah. But it's not... But the computers have gotten so much lighter since the 17-inch machine. Like, I'm here to tell you.
Well, yeah, wasn't it about 7 pounds? The 17-inch MacBook Pro was about 7 pounds.
Yeah, it was a non-zero number of pounds. The new one is a lot lighter. I have a friend who has one, so I've checked it out, and it does weigh more.
Was there an Intel 17-inch, or was it a Power PC? Was it a PowerBook?
Yeah, it was a PowerBook.
17-inch PowerBook.
Yeah.
When we went to the MacBooks, we got and we went to Intel, we got away from the 17-inch forever, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
But the person I know who had the 17-inch... basically used it until earlier this year and got the 16-inch and in the before times. And so I got to check out the 16-inch, and it's really light. It's got a weight that clocks in around what my 2015 13-inch MacBook Pro comes in at. Like
4.5 pounds?
Yeah, it's very backpackable comparatively. So, I'm definitely interested in what the pricing on these looks like. I think one thing, John, that you did not cover on the pricing of these is making them a lot cheaper will also compel adoption, I think. Like, aside from school, I think people in the market for a new laptop are going to go, well, this one's $799 and this one's $899, let's say, because you don't want the entry level. Then $899 versus $1199. Yeah, that's a really compelling offer. So,
it's 4.3 pounds, by the way, the 16-inch 2019 MacBook Pro.
Yeah.
It's 4.3.
Okay. So, yeah, it's not bad.
Do we have to move on to Charlotte, or do I have time for 60 seconds for another?
You have 60 seconds if you start them immediately.
All right, so in the same article that I linked to with Particle Debris, there is a link to some leaked information, which I'm not able to verify. From a fellow in Japan at Komiaya, who has apparently acquired the entire release list for products for the rest of the year, including a September 8th event, iPhone 12 and an Apple Watch 6 and AirTags. And then an October 27th event for ARM Max. So if you find my article, Particle Debris, you can find the link to, within the article, you can find the link to this supposed leak on Apple's roadmap. But I haven't seen any other Mac site jump all over it, so it's not confirmed yet.
Interesting.
Yeah. So Apple's promise that we'll get ARM-based Macs before the end of the year looks pretty good.
Yeah, if that's where they're...
This is over and above the DTK Mac Mini.
Yeah.
Of course.
Yeah. Which may or may not exist. We cannot confirm that.
Yeah, whether it'll get a new chip at some point, yeah. We don't know.
Yeah. As we find out more about these machines, I personally would like to know if anybody is in the market for one. If you are in the market for a new machine right now, are you holding off to get something that's Apple Silicon? Price notwithstanding, like, are you waiting for it for reasons aside from it being less expensive? I definitely want to find out about that because I would like to find out what our readers are up to. And you can let us know at observations@macobserver.com, TMO Daily on Twitter, or by leaving a comment in the show notes. Like I said, get back to us. I am currently in the market for a new laptop, and I am not convinced, even if they're dramatically cheaper, that I want to buy the first iteration of Apple Silicon. And if you disagree with me, please let me know that. Right now, we're going to kick off the other portion of the program, which is the Media Monday portion of the program. Charlotte spent a little time this weekend watching the Oprah conversation over on Apple TV Plus.
First of all, I disagree with you about Apple Silicon. I would probably end up going for that if I bought a new laptop. But
all right.
Just start the conversation. I did watch... the Oprah conversation with Emmanuel Acho. It was very Apple. Emmanuel Acho, for the people that don't know, is an NFL player, and has also started a web series over the last couple of months called Uncomfortable Conversations with a Black Man. He certainly took that notion of uncomfortable conversations surrounding race and racism to this program. It's a challenging watch. It's certainly, as you know, three white people sitting around our microphones here, it's certainly a difficult watch and makes you think, and that's all a very, very good thing. It was, yeah, as I say, it was impeccably produced. The idea is that there's obviously no one's together, obviously it was all recorded virtually, and so you have the Queen on her throne in one room, you have Emmanuel Acho on another big screen somewhere else, and then I think it was maybe 7 or 8 members of the public, actually might have gone as high as 9 or 10, dial in at different points on this, on kind of giant iPad like screens. And it all looks fantastic. I have to say, no surprise that the tech side of it worked really well. There were no clanging Zoom connections or anything like that. And the engagement from the members of the public was really good. I say this in my review. I don't know if the fact that no one was in the room together made it less confrontational. It certainly didn't take away from the kind of seriousness of the conversation, but there definitely wasn't that level of there was no kind of real confrontation. Now, I don't know if that was by design or by the fact that, you know, people are not together staring into the whites of each other's eyes.
Sure.
So I don't, but I think it probably makes it a better watch. It was noticeable to me that Oprah actually didn't talk that much. Emmanuel Acho is, as you'll see if you haven't had a chance to watch it yet, or I'm sure noticed if you have, is super smart, super eloquent, just doesn't need, like, could because he's been doing these videos as well, knows the format perfectly.
Sure.
Yeah, just doesn't need much from Oprah in terms of hosting. And so she doesn't speak that much, which is kind of probably a ringing endorsement of Emmanuel Acho's abilities. And yeah, so it's definitely worth a watch. We'd been wondering, and the three of us had kind of speculated for a while, kind of Apple spent a lot of money bringing Oprah on board. Mm-hmm. What were they going to do with her? Now, I don't think any of us are particularly surprised that it seems to be the book club and a talk show.
Yeah.
This seems to be the format, and I, you know, it's a pretty powerful time to have someone like her leading it.
Yeah. I'm definitely interested. I did not get a chance this weekend, but it is high on my list. I did not watch other TV instead. I'm hoping to get a chance to sit down with that. And part of it is because I had heard about his web series, and so I definitely wanted to check it out. I wanted to see what the conversation would look like between him and Oprah. So yeah, I want to check that out. John, you had said you did not get a chance to watch, correct?
No, I did not. I was planning on. I got sidetracked.
Yeah, it sounds like.
But it's on my list.
Yeah, it sounds like you and I are kind of like, it's next up. We just haven't sat down and watched anything, you know, let alone like ahead of this. So yeah, I absolutely want to check it out. I want to find out more. Charlotte, thank you for your review. I'm interested in this. And like you said, we did sort of wonder about what this was going to look like. And I think this is the most strategic deployment of Oprah possible.
That's a great way to put it.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think that is a great way to put it. I'll be interested to see what happens, because obviously, because Oprah has already done the kind of COVID conversation stuff. There's a separate thing on that's already that. And obviously, you know, particularly in America, race and racism and racial inequality is kind of top of the bill and top of the debate. Agenda at the moment, and so obviously it makes sense that a talk show, particularly one fronted by one of the most famous black women in the world, would take on that topic. So that almost says I'll be interested to see how it develops and where it goes, but for it now, yeah, it seems like there's lots there was a lot to unpack in the show. Let's leave it like that.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, it definitely sounded like from other stuff I read about it briefly. It definitely sounded like it's what you said. You know, it's a hard watch, but it's absolutely worthwhile. So I am looking forward to it. Sounds weird, but I guess I'm very interested to watch it. I'm definitely interested to see Oprah sit down with people. I always did enjoy watching her interview folks when they were digging into something a little bigger than just like, tell us about your latest movie. So I always liked when she was talking to somebody about something a little bit bigger. And so I want to find out how that's, how that looks, because I was always partial to that. So I definitely, especially now, want a little bit of that back again. So I think it'll be good. And I'm glad to have something to look forward to on my watch list, even if it's, you know, not necessarily the happiest topic. Definitely, it'll be nice to see Oprah on the TV again, I guess. That too.
That is certainly nice.
Yeah. Kind of like comfort food in a way.
Obviously, it goes without saying, she's magnificent.
I mean, she's Oprah. Yeah, of course she is. Hi, Oprah. I don't know if you're listening, but if you are, hi. And we'd love to have you come by and talk to John on Background Mode. That would be fantastic. So that's going to do it for us today. I want to thank both of you for being here. John, thanks so much for coming by to talk to us about
Episode Con. My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
And Charlotte, thanks for coming by to tell us about the new Oprah program on TV Plus.
Yeah, enjoy. Thanks very much for having me.
Yeah, glad to have you both here. I'm your host, Kelly Gamont. I will talk to all of you tomorrow. In the meantime, be excellent to each other and let's be careful out there.